consider control. Common difficulty in meditation. First of all, some thoughts on that. If you take note, you will see that you are violent with your perceptions. You constantly interfere by trying to control it, to direct it. The controller belongs to what is controlled. Both are objects, and one object cannot know another. So you must increasingly let perception unfold, give it complete freedom. If you let perception unfold, it will sooner or later bring you back to yourself. Allow letting go to reveal itself, and the dynamism to produce will disappear. So that kind of constant production in the mind. That, reflect on that. Then how does this transformation, this integration happen? The mind must come to a state of silence, completely empty of fear, longing, and all images. This cannot be brought about by suppression, but by observing every feeling and thought without qualification, condemnation, judgment, or comparison. Extraordinarily difficult to do that. If unmotivated alertness is to operate, the sensor must disappear. There must simply be a quiet looking at what composes the mind. In discovering the facts just as they are, agitation is eliminated. The movement of thoughts becomes slow, and we can watch each thought, its cause and content as it occurs. We become aware of every thought in its completeness, and in this totality there can be no conflict. Then only alertness remains, only silence in which there is neither observer or observed. So do not force your mind. Just watch its various movements as you would flying birds. In this uncluttered looking, all your experiences surface and unfold. For unmotivated seeing not only generates tremendous energy, but frees all tension, all the various layers of inhibitions. You see the whole of yourself. Observing everything with full attention becomes a way of life, a return to your original and natural meditative being. So that you could, and that's the difficulty with objective meditation. When you when someone prescribes some kind of object to focus on, is that we project onto the object some kind of desire of what we want to attain, or then the other objects that come up, like emotions, we project onto that what we have to get rid of. So there's a tension. There's a tension of the doer. I am someone who's focusing on this object in order to get a result. And that's not so conscious oftentimes. It's not spoken, it's just in there as attention. So the suggestions I've been making around like this receptive awareness, even though I might say that, still the tendency to kind of look for something in the object can be quite insidious. So one of the ways that meditation has been developed in India is to the contemplation of space, where one takes away one's attention from objects and just notices space. So for instance, if I were to say to you, what's the sound of the shovel, or how many people are here, or what color is the wallpaper, or the wall, whatever you would call that, the bricks, you'd look at the objects, wouldn't you? You'd be looking at the objects and taking them in. But if I were to ask you to, well, what's space? You have to relax the mind away from the objects, and you can't really you can't find space in the same way. But you know it, there is a sense of space, still present. So the mind relaxes, but is still awake. So that's a very, very valid way of sustaining awareness and not getting caught by this kind of tension we often have with the object. with this trying to do something about it or get rid of it. Another way that that's talked about is choiceless awareness, where one doesn't choose any particular object, but one just allows the flow of objects to come and go. And this is what he's really referring to there, the choiceless awareness. That's hard to do because oftentimes we are the habits of consciousness, of thought, of emotion are so very, very powerful that we get taken by them for long, long periods of time. So I think many meditators find a way of doing both. You know, they find some way of having an object of meditation which evokes for them that sense of open-hearted awareness. So a lot of people find that, like with the compassion practices, that they find that's very relaxing, very opening. Some use the breath. But then also to do practices where one isn't always engaged with an object, that's also very helpful, very skillful. To just, well, in one way you could say listening's like that. If you're not just trying to listen to a sound, just listening is a kind of relaxing of the mind, but present. Choiceless awareness. Space. Ajahn Sumedho uses the sound of silence. He likes that. I use that sometimes. I use the heart. Because when your mind is quite relaxed and open, then you just get a sense of this kind of ringing silence. Ease of being. Then you can use language. Ease of being. Nowhere to go. Nothing to do. And then if you experiment with that, then if you're having the meal, and you know, you're getting maybe self-conscious. Say, let's say you're having the meal and you just drop the toast on the floor, wrong side up. It's always wrong side up. and you're feeling, you know, everyone's being very mindful, and you've just blown it, and you're really self-conscious, right? And you're sitting there. And then to just kind of to allow that, what he's saying, allow that to really flower. Don't you don't have to fix it or get rid of it. Just allow it, allow that perception just to have its own life. And so you're really practicing with something there that usually, when you get self-conscious, you know, you do all kinds of things not to feel that way. But to actually just, you know, you get this chance, let's let that self-conscious, let you be fully there. And that takes you back to the silence of the heart. So something which is embarrassing, say, has the potential to awaken you, right? Rather than, you know, all the things we do. So this is quite profound, actually, to let the perception or feeling, whatever, let it have its life. Again, that's within the boundaries of morality and good living, right? It's not, you're not acting on it, but you're allowing awareness just to let that flower. So we're trying to carry forward these subtleties of practice into everything now. Okay? Everything that's going on, it's all useful. It's all very, very, it's all important in that way. We, as like our training as monastics, is to shave our heads today, but also we're trained in sense restraint. And also in contentment. Contentment with little is a very powerful part of our training. So we have reflections on our requisites, on the things we use, and our position in the community, and all of that. And so the reflection is like just contentment. Now, it doesn't mean I'm always content, right? But I've got a mirror around the way my heart and my mind are operating. So when you take on something like contentment, and then discontent arises, then you're content with the discontent. You let the discontent just be there, really flower, and then it goes into cessation. So then we begin to see how things actually cease in the mind. Quite often we don't let them cease. We get into that kind of control mode, and doing something about it, or getting rid of it, or figuring it out, and it never ceases. We just kind of recycle these things again and again and again. But to actually like feel discontent or discomfort, as I've been saying around the sittings, and just to let it just be fully there, you could see how how, what, do you, what what's happening? The mind, the aware mind, is a stillness that's always there, right? And then the distraction by the object is something that takes us away from that home ground. So then when you have something like discontent or distraction, and if I'm just fully able just to be with that, fine, fully allowing it to flower, you can see what's happening. The mind's really settling into awareness. It's not kind of caught by the object. And a lesson around that, around like some little embarrassing incident, or just like the tightness of your belt, or the heat in the room, and just the little simple things, then one begins to notice cessation, the third noble truth, the cessation of suffering, the cessation of a problem, the cessation of needing to do something about it. Mind, and we, you know, we can work with anything around that. So this whole way of projecting onto objects through memory what I want or what I don't want. So maybe I've had a really good meditation yesterday, and then I'm meditating now. Then I project onto that now my memory of what I had before. And I'm already in conflict because I want what happened before. So to come to that purity and innocence, I suppose, of presence. Zen mind, beginner's mind, that's what that's kind of pointing to again and again and again. I think there's a nice little piece on contentment here. These are great markers. Staples. Only contentment can make you happy. Desires fulfilled breed more desires. That's a good one there. And of course, if you take that dogmatically, you say, well, can't I eat? So it's a reflect, you know, it's not like position, it's like, what does that mean? So that the doctrinaire person says, oh, it's ridiculous, you can eat. Only contentment can make you happy. Desires fulfilled breed more desires. Keeping away from all desires, practicing contentment in what comes by itself, is a very fruitful state, a precondition to the state of fullness. Don't distrust its apparent sterility and emptiness. So for the desire mind, contentment seems like ho-hum, oftentimes. And to sort of just to trust in that. Why? I suppose because one has seen that whole mind which is looking for objects doesn't work. It's not there. Don't distrust its apparent sterility and emptiness. Believe me, it is the satisfaction of desires that breeds misery. That's a reverse to consumerism. Believe me, it is the satisfaction of desire that breeds misery. Freedom from desires is bliss. So this is the third noble truth, the cessation of wanting. And there's functional need, there's functional wanting. You know, you have to eat and so on and so forth. But this is a more deeper reflection. What you need will come to you if you do not ask for what you do not need. So let's perhaps, I won't give a guided instruction, take what you have found useful, but do try, like, once you feel kind of settled or whatever, try things like just listening, experiment with the idea of space. A lot of people don't understand that. It's not something you can figure out intellectually. It's just, you're kind of intuitive. You relax the mind away from the objects. Choiceless awareness. And people, then the doubter would say, am I choosing? Am I not choosing? That's doubt. So doubt comes. Am I doing it right? Doubt comes. Doubt, you know, you just let it come, let it come, let it come. So sometimes to do something vigorous, to get grounded is good. Like if you're dull and you're sleepy, sometimes you're able to observe the dullness. But sometimes really it's just too strong and you need to stand up. Or pump up the pranayama a bit, whatever, you know, you kind of have to develop your own skills around that. Okay, let's sit for a while.